I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're spending today's program in and around Baltimore. We're exploring the legacy of the 1968 riots. We'll talk with two former mayors, listen to oral histories from community people who lived through the riots, stories collected by University of Baltimore students, and we'll hear from Baltimore's future, two young men who became debate champions. But first, on Friday, we marked the anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s murder on April 4, 1968. His assassination sparked unrest in many American cities, and 40 years later, some communities are still struggling to recover. That's true for Baltimore. In recent years, Baltimore has become known for its tourist attractions, including the classic baseball stadium, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. But it's also famous for the kind of urban dysfunction that has made it the all-too-real setting for one of television's most gripping dramas, The Wire. Many see the roots of those problems in the 68 riots. Last week, we took a driving tour of riot-affected areas in East and West Baltimore. It's part of a program sponsored by the University of Baltimore called Baltimore 68, Riots and Rebirth. Our guide was Lyniel Henderson. He's a professor of government and public administration at the university. How did this tour come about? I understand that this isn't, you're not just doing this for us, that in fact, that you conduct these tours.
Well,
how did this idea come about?
I think part of what we were trying to do here is to try to find a way to understand the historical evolution of our city and our town in sort of realistic terms. So having an idea of where we've been, we have a clear idea of where we don't want to be in the future. And so that was the initial idea. We were also trying to find a constructive way to commemorate such a momentous event as the riots, and at the same time balance it with hope. We say riots and rebirth, and not just riots.
The night of King's death, there were a few reports of fires and unrest scattered throughout the city, but the riots began in earnest on April 6th. The scars from that time are still vivid as our tour takes us through Baltimore's west side. It's worth noting that there are some well-maintained houses with bright paint and tidy stoops.
The areas that we're passing now, you'll see a lot of new buildings, a lot of residential buildings.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
oh,
some commercial buildings.
It seems so new here. Why is everything new?
Well, because a lot of this area was affected by the riots. You lost a lot of housing here. A lot of structures were damaged and had to be torn down. And for many years, these areas where you see buildings now were vacant lots.
As we head toward a major target of the rioting in 68, everything about the neighborhood gets a little rougher. We're down at the heels.
We're on Edmondson Avenue right now, a major vehicle mainstream heavily hit by the riots. And you can see as we made the turn that a number of houses are still boarded up there. And they've been boarded up for years and years.
I thought the image that a lot of people have of the riots is that they mainly hit commercial blocks, like commercial strips.
No,
that's
not the case. They also hit neighborhoods. They hit a lot of housing, off streets, side streets, alleys. So, yes, the commercial infrastructure was damaged, but also other parts of the neighborhood were damaged.
There You're saying schools, individual homes?
Individual homes
were damaged.
Schools were damaged. Faith institutions were damaged. So it wasn't just the commercial infrastructure that was hit.
It's like an earthquake.
No, absolutely.
Didn't discriminate.
It is a natural disaster, but an unnatural disaster.
A disaster that devastated the African-American community. In 1968, when segregation was facing its first serious challenges, African-Americans from every walk of life lived as neighbors in Baltimore. But many middle-class blacks felt they were targets of the riots, too. Black merchants had shops looted. In the wake of those riots, those with the means left the city, including blacks. Neighborhoods that had been solidly middle or working class became pockets of concentrated poverty. So what is it that you think led to the kind of rage that made people want to burn their own community?
Well, when you take out a leader who has the stature of a Martin Luther King, who many considered to be their leader, their pathway to hope, and the embodiment of the very kinds of values we said we were about, it was almost as if the white community was saying no to us by taking out our leadership. And our response to that was a violent response in some places. I think the other thing to point out here is that the level of anger and frustration that we were talking about in 1968 was such that if we individualize it, people felt hopeless.
The violence raged for days, leaving six people dead, hundreds injured, thousands under arrest. Many of the institutions that sustained the community never recovered, but some did. Our tour van turns into a parking lot, and we step outside in front of a strip mall.
This is the Edmondson Village
Shopping Center, correct.
Why did we stop here? What happened
Well,
here?
We stopped here because during the riots there was looting and burning of certain shops in this center. It was shut down for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, before any commercial activity was started up again. The smaller retail establishments that you see here actually emerged 5 to 7 years after the initial rioting.
Where did people go for their basic supplies, like shoes, the barber shop, the laundromat? Where did they go when all these stores disappeared?
Many of them went downtown because a lot of those kinds of shops continue to operate in the downtown area, although on a small scale. And they actually ended up paying more to go downtown because they had to get down there, first of all, on transportation. And then secondly, things tend to cost a wee bit more downtown than they do in some of the neighborhoods. So that's where they went. But they couldn't go very much to the neighborhood.
Where are we going next?
We are going next, I think, back on the other side of town to Gay Street and to East Baltimore. We've been almost exclusively in West Baltimore so far.
All right, let's go.
As we head east, Professor Henderson warns that there are still many myths about the riots, including that they were responsible for everything that's gone wrong since.
One of the things that you have to be careful about is attributing too much to the riots, because there were already challenges socioeconomically in these neighborhoods, and even if there had not been a riot whatsoever, there would have been challenges in housing, commercial development, business development. One of the things that of course, that we're challenged by, as we are with every big city in Baltimore, is with drug distribution and dealership, drug addiction, and drug-related homicides. About 278 of them last year, a high of about 339 in the mid-1990s.
The drug culture, Professor Henderson says, already had a foothold in Baltimore before the riots. The suburbs had begun luring middle-class whites away from the city years earlier. And there were racial tensions simmering between blacks and whites who competed for the city's manufacturing jobs. That tug of war turned ugly in the riots, especially along Gay Street, one of the final points on our tour. On a street with half a dozen boarded-up houses, we stop in front of a large red brick shell of a building. A nonprofit organization plans to make this their new headquarters. But back in 68, it was the site of the American Brewery.
They were damaged during the riots, yeah. There was some looting, obviously. American Breweries would be a strategic site.
Was it targeted for any particular reason? It was just...
Well, it was in the neighborhood, and also we knew it was not black-owned.
Yeah. Looters also targeted small, white-owned businesses along this corridor, and many of these shop owners didn't wait for the authorities to protect them. They sat in their store windows, brandishing rifles to scare away potential thieves. Professor Henderson says that although hundreds of businesses closed after the riots, there were several who returned, cleaned up the damage, and reopened. There are other parts of Baltimore's 68 story to remember, that the National Guard had to protect African-American neighborhoods from white mobs who were chanting white power and looking for revenge, and that African-American leaders and citizens of all races stepped forward to put out fires, stop the looting, and calm the city. There's a lot left to learn about what happened here during the riots and afterward, but as our van returns to the university, Professor Henderson tells us what he hopes we and others who participate in the experience will take from what happened in 1968.
What I've hoped we've learned is at least three things. One is that we have to be in touch with the needs and emotions and economic and educational aspirations of all of our citizens. Second, that there is hope after a disaster. There's been a lot of rebirth in neighborhoods in Baltimore and in the city. And third, we need to concentrate on working on prevention of those things that lead to the kind of disaster we saw back in 1968.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
Lineal Henderson is a professor of government and public administration at the University of Baltimore. He was our guide on our tour of Baltimore neighborhoods affected by the 1968 riots. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
and you can see an audio slideshow from Green's Hardware. It's a Baltimore store that was destroyed by the riots and then rebuilt in the city. The patrons tell their stories. For some, even 40 years later, the memories are all too real.
I watch grown ladies, grown men crying, stunned. And as children, we didn't know how to handle that. We didn't know how to handle that at all.
That's longtime Baltimore resident Reginald Johnson. You can hear his story and others in an audio slideshow. Please go to our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Just ahead, mayors who made history. We talk with Tommy D'Alessandro III, the man who presided over Baltimore during the 1968 riots. He watched for trouble in the city hours after King's death.
We found absolutely nothing. Everything was calm. But I did say to the governor, I said, Governor, it's too calm. I was just very apprehensive. I was afraid.
And a conversation with the first African-American elected mayor of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoke. That's coming up next on Tell Me More.